This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 11 and 12. The Sorting Hat's new song and Professor Umbridge. In these chapters, the hat is tripping.
Yeah, he's got something to say. It has something to say.
And Umbridge is just applying one of the worst possible pedagogical methods you can.
She's, she definitely doesn't, yeah, anyway.
She reminds me, she's the random person they're pulling on into the classroom in New Mexico and wherever because they can't, like, they have to call in the National Guard for shortages with teachers.
Yeah, she's something else. This person, I mean, I have some things I like about her. We can talk about it. Not in a flattering way, but just the character itself.
As a literary character.
Exactly.
Yeah, because, oh my God, like, literally seeing the articles in my newsfeed about, like, literally just 18 years or older and, like, able-bodied, like, you know, that is how low the bar is in terms of, you know, wow, just getting bodies into the classroom.
Yeah, it's very frustrating the kind of where education is right now. So
yeah, and it's you know, my mother was a teacher, I know all about it, and I you know, worked a little bit at university and community colleges in Oklahoma, my husband's home state, where that's ranked like the 48th like worst, you know, wow, in regards to like the lack of funding with education and stuff, and it's just bleh.
Yeah, my mom's a teacher too, so it's and she's a teacher right now. It's a hard time to be a teacher.
It was always hard. They just expect you to be sponges for abuse because the parents are not paying attention.
That's very, very, very true.
Anyway, but so chapter 11, the Sorting Hat's new song. So we pick up exactly where we left off. Where in the carriages heading off to the castle, and Harry can still see the silhouettes of the spooky horses.
Yeah.
You know, yes. And he's like, you can still see them. And he's like, but no one else can except Luna. But Luna said they were always here. So why can I suddenly see it? Many questions.
And he's really kind of mentally wrestling with that. The questions that we discussed too. So, but obviously important because they wouldn't mention it again if it was nothing. So I'm going to put a pen in it and see what happens.
Yep. And so Ginny brings up, like, where's Hagrid? Like,
yeah.
He can't have left, can he? I'll be quite glad if he has, said Luna. He isn't a very good teacher, is he? So what do you think of Luna's assessment of Hagrid's teaching methods?
You know, I think Luna's pretty cool, but I did not think this opinion is very cool because I love Hagrid. And I guess if she's going to kind of have that, what do we call it? Ravenclaw. And I don't know. I feel like I don't know a lot of Ravenclaws. They haven't been fully fleshed out like Luna has been thus far. If that kind of his teaching methods are seen as not super like traditional and academic and a little more loose, maybe. I mean, I guess,
but
that
that's
would be
kind of weird because like Ravenclaws, for as much as they're touted as being like smart, it's more than just being smart. It's being creative and thinking outside the box. It's not rigidly being like Hermione or McGonagall. And so that it's a, in that way, when you think about like when after I've, you know, read and watched so much analysis about the Ravenclaw symbolism and the Ravenclaw house, it is kind of interesting that Luna takes this position of, by Hagrid being unorthodox, therefore he's not a very good teacher. But again, we've never gotten full detail from Harry the writer about it, with the exception of a few lessons. So we don't know quite how rigorous Hagrid is, regardless of, you know, the creatures that he chooses to showcase right. in his class.
I was kind of surprised, because for those exact reasons, Luna seemed kind of quirky and weird. And I've kind of always imagined like Hagrid kind of quirky and weird, for lack of a better term. And she would kind of be into that. But then so she was kind of like, ugh, no.
Maybe she does dig the more obscure animals that he does, and just not him and his specific method.
Maybe she's got a prejudice against giants. I don't know.
But Luna assesses, well, we think he's a bit of a joke in Ravenclaw. You've got a rubbish sense of humor then, Ron snapped.
I'm on Ron's side here.
Yep. And then they come to a spa stop and then get out. Harry's still kind of looking at the spooky horses, and finally he tears himself away from them and goes into the Great Hall. And Harry's taking notice that everyone is kind of like whispering behind their hands as he passes by.
Yeah, because I think this is the last time the school saw him, he was carrying Cedric's body, right? I don't know if there was much. I mean, that was kind of the big moment. And there's also been a lot about him in the oh my gosh, I can't think of, this is always a challenge for me. We report these at the end of the day, and I'm always like totally
the Daily Prophet. Smashed.
The Daily Prophet. Yeah. So, which has been very.
Maybe this will help you remember, because there is a podcast, The Gaily Prophet.
That will help me remember.
Where the co-hosts are of the LGBTQIA+ community.
Fortunately, that will help me remember. So, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of things to gossip about Mr. Potter. There always
yep.
are.
Yep. And they're looking. Hagrid's not at the table. Where is he? And finally, Harry thinks, you know, maybe he's not back yet, you know, from his mission, the thing that he was doing over the summer for Dumbledore.
Yeah, we still don't really know what is going on there yet. But when they're looking yep. At the teachers, they notice, Harry notices somebody he has noticed.
Yes, it is the Umbridge woman. She was at my hearing. She works for Fudge. And Hermione's like, what on earth is she doing here then? And Hermione, of course, picks it up before the boys do. And she's like, no, surely not.
Yeah, got a little bit of a spy in there from the Ministry of Magic, don't we?
Yes, we do. But before that, we got McGonagall comes in with all the first years. And this is the first time we've heard a Sorting Hat song since Harry's, you know, emergence into this world in year one. So how did you feel about this song?
It had a little more substance than the first one. This was pretty, the Sorting Hat definitely had some thoughts that were shared during this. I'm sorry, I'm giving a he. I don't know if it's,
it's a non-binary hat.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, I feel guilty saying he, but the hat definitely goes on for a little bit and is a little bit preachy, but not, I wouldn't say like in a bad way. Encouraging togetherness, even though there are differences, and kind of reiterating the story of the Hogwarts houses. He's got a lot to the Sorting Hat has a lot to say this year.
Because there's lots of talk within the fandom about, the house system and how much Harry the writer, you know, as the series goes on, where he succeeds and fails, and showing like the nuances of Slytherin and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of interesting that in that history of the fandom, of a constantly debated issue of this validity of this sort of tribalism, you know, with the Hogwarts houses, that even the Sorting Hat itself within the canon text is partially criticizing that system.
Yeah. Even an inanimate object can see the kind of craziness there.
Mm-hmm. So, and then Nearly Headless Nick explains that this is not the first time that it's given advice before. And they're like, how does the hat know when it's time to give advice? And he's like, I have no idea, but he does chill out in Dumbledore's office, probably hear stuff.
That's pretty, I mean, yeah, that kind of seems very obvious when you think about it. If it kind of can pick up the information, it's probably knows a lot more. Well, then why would Dumbledore keep it? Anyway, I have some questions. But
I don't know. Maybe the hat is under a certain clause. You're not allowed to disclose, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Maybe he has a NDA, but he can hint.
And so the sorting goes on and they eat. And then we've got, what do we've got here? You know, Dumbledore continues to give the announcements, and he introduces Professor Grubbly Plank, but doesn't really go into that much detail. Doesn't even mention Hagrid. Like, oh, Hagrid will be back, you know, at this date. He doesn't say anything about Hagrid. And then we get also that Professor Umbridge, our new defense against the dark arts teacher. And tryouts for the Hogwarts Quidditch teams will take place on, he broke off looking inquiringly at Professor Umbridge. Like, so she had interrupted him. And so all the other teachers are like, who dares to interrupt Dumbledore?
Yeah, she definitely has, I keep saying this, she has something to say. And
McGonagall's mouth is so thin and Professor Sprout's eyebrows had disappeared into her flyaway hair.
And Umbridge goes on for a little while about with her Ministry of Magic propaganda a little bit. She has a lot to say.
Yeah. So what did you think of the speech she gives, right before, we get Hermione's analysis of it? What were you thinking about it?
I mean, this is again a little bit of the, I'm unspoiled to a point. I know that Umbridge is not a good teacher or a good person, a good witch. And I know that there's got to be more to her. This is not, Harry never portrays her as particularly likable. He kind of talks about her like she looks like a frog. There's a lot of ragging on cardigans, which I'm not too psyched about as I'm wearing a cardigan tonight. But I'm sure it looks a little different than what Umbridge has. So
I actually have a pink fluffy cardigan, but I actually, it's my intent that if I go that road, I was intending to use it for a Luna Lovegood costume.
That's a better use of it. Even with her hate on Hagrid.
Did see a meme of a short, stout woman in pink tweed and a pink skirt. And a person took a picture from behind her at the airport. And it's like, it's Umbridge at the airport.
Oh my gosh. That's really funny. You know, it's funny that you say that because I was thinking about the pink suit. That's usually when people think about that, they think about Jackie Onassis, which is a very classy person. Or a classy lady. And that's kind of deeply tied with her, but with Umbridge too. I mean, that's how I envision her. So I'm sure there was some obviously intent there, but I didn't, I thought she was okay. And to be quite honest, I was listening to Jim Dale read this. So he did a very excellent, Umbridge voice. So I heard it in that way as well.
But yeah, on the surface, it sounds pretty normal that, we constantly are reevaluating on what serves us and what doesn't, and keeping tradition. On the surface, it all sounds all, hunky-dory, right. But Hermione is very quickly able to cut through it to the subtext of, okay, they're going to use all this as an excuse and justification for the ministry to stick their nose into Hogwarts in a way that Fudge didn't before and would usually just leave Dumbledore alone in regards to the school.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, again, something's up, and now we have kind of a little minion from the ministry here.
And Dumbledore clapped. The staff followed his lead, though Harry noticed that several of them brought their hands together only once or twice before stopping.
Yeah, they kind of, Harry's writing this, that there's something up with this woman, and everybody kind of has a sense of it. And I think maybe, you know, my kind of reading without the knowledge that she's not the best, interrupting Dumbledore, it's just, it's in poor taste.
Yeah, it's a big faux pas at home.
Yes.
And so feast comes to an end, and Harry separated from Ron and Hermione because they've got their prefect's duty. So just as Percy would show Harry in the first years when he started, Ron and Hermione have to show the little first years what's what. And it's funny, Ron is like, oi, like midgets. It's like, you can't call them midgets. It's like me. It's like me working in a university. Like, I have to be careful, like, not to call them kids, like, to their face, even though, like, to me, like, they are kids.
That used to be my favorite at my old job. I would call the people above me these kids, and I don't know. Maybe it was just my own little joke. I have a weird sense of humor. So.
Yep. And so Harry goes up, and again, noticing again, everyone's whispering at him. Like, even this group of like younger students. Like, are like terrified of him.
And, yeah, they kind of don't know what to think about him because of the way he's been portrayed. And in the Daily Prophet, see, I told you I'd remember that. Yeah. And just at kind of the last big crescendo experience at Hogwarts. So,
yep. And so he heads up to Gryffindor Tower, realizes he doesn't know the new password, but Neville is able to rescue him because the password is the same as his. Crazy magical cactus.
That is good. A win for Neville here. There are a couple wins for him. He seems.
Yeah, which I think if McGonagall is in charge, I think either McGonagall as the head of Gryffindor or Dumbledore as the headmaster controls the passwords. That was very sweet of them to do for Neville.
Yes, yes. Good old Neville.
Yep. And so Harry goes up to his dormitory. And has this whole showdown with Seamus Finnegan, of all people. Do explain your thoughts and how you felt as this unfolded.
This kind of came out of nowhere to me. Because, you know, these Seamus and, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find the other guy's name.
Dean Thomas.
Yeah. It was kind of like you heard the names in other books. But they're just kind of background characters a little bit. Mm-hmm. And very divisive amongst the two friends. Let me back up. It reminded me very much of kind of, you know, two ways to take in information, which is very much of our time right now. Mm-hmm. So you have people reading things and being like, I'm going to use like Fauci simply because I was on a website and he was on there. It was for work, whatever. But some people think he is like worst person in the world, you know, like
he's getting up into Bill Gates territory in terms of how horrible he is now.
The poor guy. And, you know, when I was with looking at his picture with a coworker, and I was like, you know, I'm sad I know his name because of a global pandemic. But he's worked for years and nobody was kind of like, oh, Dr. Fauci. Maybe if he paid attention to the AIDS crisis, he would have like some knowledge of him. My point being, I'm going to just compare Fauci and Harry. So, and then the other half of the population is like, this guy's great. And people are just, you know, spewing, you know, spitting venom at him. So it shows how those things can affect kids at school. And much like we've talked about our parents being teachers, you know, my mom sees that. I remember being a kid in school during an election year and taking votes. And it's like, when I was in third grade, who was I going to vote for? I was going to probably vote for the person my parents were going to vote for. So I know these are teenagers and they do have some sort of, you know, their own opinions a little bit, but it's just interesting to see how opinions of Harry have trickled down and been very divisive in this community.
Yes. So, you know, Seamus is, you know, well, first it says Dean. Well, first of all, it's Dean is kind of stirring up shit because it's Dean is like better than Seamus is anyway. He was just telling me and why. And then, you know, Seamus says my mom didn't want me to come back to Hogwarts. And Harry's like, why? And, like, shit. I am more judgmental of Seamus in this rereading than I have been in readings past. because I think in maybe previous readings, I would think, okay, he's just a child. What else is he supposed to think in the context of, you know, what his mother is believing, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But Seamus, again, moving forward, like knowing he shares a dormitory with this kid, Seamus did not have to bring this up.
Yeah.
He didn't. He could have just kept his mouth shut.
Right. Right.
And he chooses not to.
He chose violence.
Yeah. It was like, it's like Cersei Lannister, I choose violence.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm more judgmental in that regard. So yeah, he says, she didn't want me to come back because of you. And Harry's just like, she believes the Daily Prophet, said Harry. She thinks I'm a liar and Dumbledore's an old fool. Seamus looked up at him. Yeah, something like that. And then, you know, it's Seamus is like, look, what did happen that night when, you know, when Cedric Diggory and all. And it's like, from the way Seamus responds to Harry in terms of how it just escalates, if he's already set in his ways, he doesn't need to ask Harry that question.
Right. Right. He's like baiting him to.
Yeah, it's a baiting. It's not legitimately like, you know, Harry, this is really like, you know, out of context. This is out of character for Harry. I've known Harry for a few years, not really well, but you know, so. And Harry's just like, what are you asking me for? Harry retorted. Just read the Daily Prophet like your mother. Why don't you that? That'll tell you all you need to know. Don't you have a go at my mother, snapped Seamus. And again, Seamus is like, leave my mother out of this. And it's like, this whole conversation was started because you're, through mentioning your mother, you know, you are, you know, accusing Harry of being a liar.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, I didn't expect something like that to kind of occur. I don't know why. I feel a little naive, but I think it's, again, demonstrative of just how much this Harry's life has kind of affected everyone in the wizarding world's life. I mean, of course, because it's mainly because of Voldemort, but, you know, just the how opinions have been divided and manipulated because of the Daily Prophet and just.
And yeah, and again, it doesn't take all that much for Seamus to be like, you know what? He's right. I don't want to share a dormitory with him anymore. He's a madman.
Dude, chill. That's what I would say. Oh my God.
You believe all this rubbish he's come out with about, you know, who do you reckon he's telling the truth? Yeah, I do. Then you're mad too, said Seamus in disgust. And then Dean's like, you know, my parents are muggles, mate. They don't know nothing about no deaths at Hogwarts because I'm not stupid enough to tell them.
Smart guy. Smart
boy. And right. Neville is like, my gran says that's rubbish. She says that the Daily Prophet that's going downhill, not Dumbledore. She's canceled our subscription.
And she's the smart one, right? I don't know.
Yeah, but. Well, it's just interesting. It's just interesting in the sense of, you know, before, you know, Fudge's like flat denial, like at the end of book four, you know, it wasn't like, again, like if there's no body.
Right.
Like it was a sentiment within the wizarding community that it was a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, yeah, Neville's grandmother is like one of those where it's like, oh yeah, like, yeah, or like Hagrid, who's like, yeah, he was going to come back. There was no body.
Right. Right.
So yeah. So it's just, yep. And what we got, you know, Seamus tries to like angrily, like push his curtains back, but he pulls them so vigorously that they crash to the floor.
Oh goodness.
And I think Harry is just so, not that he had, you know, he was told what was going on by Hermione and, you know, everyone else, but he was still within the confines and safety of Grimmauld Place, you know, amongst friends. Like, this is his first time really seeing the societal scale of, you know, of Fudge's agenda.
Right.
And I think it's just also extra shocking to him because it's not, if you doubt me, then you doubt Dumbledore. And like, again, just Dumbledore's reputation. Harry's just like, are they really willing to just completely negate everything Dumbledore, you know, says after all the, like, you know, many, you know, being quote unquote one of the best wizards of the 20th century.
Right. Yeah. They're very quick to kind of turn on him after being so respected. But I feel like it's just so applicable to modern society and how we flip on people so quickly. I feel like I could go down a cancel culture road, but I'm not going.
Yeah. And Harry's just like, had Dumbledore suffered like this all summer as first the Wizard Gamut, then the International Confederation of Wizards had thrown him from their ranks? Was it anger at Harry, perhaps, that had stopped Dumbledore getting in touch with him for months? Two of them were in this together. After all, Dumbledore had believed Harry, announced his version of events to the whole school and then to the wider wizarding community. Anyone who thought Harry was a liar had to think Dumbledore was too, or else that Dumbledore had been hoodwinked.
And then what does he say? They'll know we're right in the end, thought Harry miserably, as Ron got into bed. Basically, Harry's having that, like, he kind of wrestling with his conscience a little bit. But he, in deep down, I think he knows he's right. He knows,
yeah, and well,
he knows
like,
what happened, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's very much in the vein of that, what is that quote, like, God forgive them, they know not what they do.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I forget the Jesus Harry Jesus or whatever.
Yep. And so we get more of, you know, the smear campaign stuff and whatever in chapter 12, but I guess here is a nice pause between chapters for me to explain this is why this is my favorite book, specifically in regards to the smear campaigns, because that is the situation that I personally dealt with in regards to, again, my husband's ex-girlfriend, because she was total full on, like, this guy is a monster, a narcissist, everything under the sun, and just trying to create this image of him as this abusive person and just shove all this quote-unquote infamy on him within our social circle. And then, you know, naturally me being the woman he started to date after that relationship, I naturally also got, you know, that infamy, you know, attached to me as well. And so constantly having to deal with issues like Harry's thinking about is like, you know, and again, Harry can't cope with it well because he's a teenager who's been traumatized by the return of Satan in a crazy cauldron cult shit thing.
Yeah, that whole.
So he's not in any way emotionally able to deal with it, but he does even attempt to try and think about, like, how do you deal with it? How do you defend yourself without being like, if you defend yourself, then people think, oh, you're being defensive, and that's further indicative of blah, X, Y, Z. Like, don't talk about it, and then just blah, blah, blah. Like, constantly having to, like, ask those questions of how do you do this damage control?
Yeah, that's got to be. That can't be easy.
No, which is why, you know, I have so much sympathy for Caps Lock Harry, because he's a 15-year-old dealing with this. You know, me as a adult in my mid late 20s trying to deal with a similar situation, and even as someone like me who's not an impulsive person, it's hard to just sit there and just accept that, yeah, there's going to be this, you know, the shit floating, you know, online about me because of my choices that shouldn't be anyone's business, but someone decided that it was their business because they decided that a certain person couldn't have a life after their relationship ended.
People are so insane. I'm sorry I had to deal with that.
So now we've got chapter 12, Professor Umbridge. And so pretty long chapter. It was 50 minutes on the Jim Dale audiobook.
Wow.
And it basically goes through Harry's entire first day at Hogwarts.
Yeah, because we get Snape's class, I think.
We get many classes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's really, we've ever done that before. Maybe kind of like a light version of that, but.
I feel like we did, because usually the deal is you have to at least get a detailed scene of like the first Defense Against the Dark Arts class with the new teacher at the very least.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like the last time it was this heavy was in book 3, because it was showing like Professor Trelawney's class, McGonagall's class, Hagrid's class, like many classes.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But Seamus is dressed at top speed next morning and left the dormitory before Harry had even put on his socks.
Diva. Oh my goodness. Can't hang.
Yeah, don't worry about it, Harry said, Dean muttered. He's just, but apparently he was unable to say what exactly Seamus was, and after a slightly awkward pause, followed him out of the room. So I am curious, like, what Dean, you know, thinks about this.
It's a very aggressive reaction to something that, you know, I don't know. It's a pretty, I mean, I guess I'm also looking at this as, like, we know the true story. We know what happened. And his reaction is just kind of seems overkill, but we don't, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe yep. there's a reason.
And Hermione's like, what's the matter? You look absolutely horrible. And she's like, oh, for heaven's sakes. And then she sees the on the bulletin board, Fred and George are advertising for testers for their stuff.
You know, that's fine. Again, they have a very entrepreneurial spirit. So
we regret but, that all work is undertaken at applicant's own risk.
But this is putting Ron in a very uncomfortable spot that, you know, he's prefect, but he also has these two brothers that are kind of, for lack of a better term, ornery. So yeah. Hermione is like, we have to take this down, you know.
And he just wants nothing to do with it. And again, because of all the brothers, I think Ron has always been the most intimidated by Fred and George. Not that they mean to be maliciously, but just their nature and their dynamic. Again, I put a lot of insecurities that Ron has at Fred and George's feet for not being a little more gracious.
That makes sense, for sure.
So, but, yep. And yeah, we regret that all work is undertaken at applicant's own risk. You know, that's like with the study abroad program I work for. The students have to sign that waiver that if shit happens because of COVID, you can't sue us.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. It's just like my yoga classes. If you fall over, it's not my fault. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really sad in the American context how it's not like we don't want this to happen to you, like, you know, that's not the tragedy. If something bad happens, the tragedy is we don't want you to sue us.
It's rampant. We've had some off mic conversations where I won't say anymore.
Yep. And so Hermione's like, when she's told about Seamus, is like, yeah, Lavender thinks so too, she said gloomily. Been having a nice little chat with her about whether or not I'm a lying, attention-seeking prat, have you, said Harry loudly. No, said Hermione calmly. I told her to keep her big fat mouth shut about you, actually. And it would be quite nice if you stopped jumping down Ron and my throats, Harry, because if you haven't noticed, we're on your side.
I'm glad they kind of called him on this because he's obviously going through, like, I guess it's very teenager to think everybody is kind of obsessed with you. Some adults might have that issue too. Sometimes, you know, I know. But I'm glad she was kind of like, hey, please stop. You know, we're trying to be helpful here. So good for Hermione.
Yeah. But it is also true that, again, from my personal experience that I mentioned, it's the sad reality of that there's only a very limited amount of people that you can talk to about the actual truth. And so what, even if you're not angry at them, you get into these like arguments with them because you're wanting them being a placeholder for the people who are trying to say you're lying. And then it's just like, bleh.
Very familiar with that experience, right? I won't go into detail, but yes. Yeah.
Reached the foot of the marble staircase, a line of fourth-year Ravenclaws were crossing the entrance hall. They caught sight of Harry and hurried to form a tighter group, as though frightened he might attack stragglers.
That's just so silly, the reaction that the people are having right now.
Yeah, Well, first, we've got Angelina seems pretty okay with him, because Angelina doesn't mention anything about, you know, crazy Harry stuff. Is just like, yay, Quidditch is on. We need to replace the keeper because Oliver Wood has graduated.
I kind of had to think about that with Oliver Wood had gone, but I like her. She's all business. She's like, let's do this. Okay, bye. And then she's gone. I was like,
yeah. And I don't know if it's definitely stated or not, but at least in my mind and within the movies, she's always been portrayed as black.
Yeah. They did call that out. Mm-hmm. So.
We've got the mail in, and Harry's like, you know, Sirius won't have sent me anything in only 24 hours. And Harry's like, why are you still getting the Daily Prophet? I'm not bothering, load of rubbish. It's best to know what the enemy is saying, said Hermione. And it's like,
again, like, I feel like we can relate this to normal times. I have tried to read another perspective sometimes, but I just get too up in my feels about it. I guess I'm not as level-headed as Hermione. So,
and I guess it depends on the type of median. Like I'm not willing, like, in terms of Fox News and crap. Like, mm-hmm. when it's something, again, like, I'm thinking of, like, the time, like, pre-Trump, mm-hmm. pre-COVID, when it was more, in my opinion, at least more commonplace to be conservative without being a complete insane person.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that still exists, but it's just been, it's been overshadowed by all the, you know, obnoxious ones.
Yeah. It's very, things are in extremes right now. It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah. So, but yeah, she's right. Like, you, and again, the same thing with, again, with that personal experience I had, certain people would tell me, why do you read her stuff online if it just upsets you? And I'm like, if I had a doctor or forensic psychologist say to me, okay, she's just immature, but she is not going to attack you one day, then yes, I would have happily ignored that shit. Yeah. It was just so extreme that I just felt I couldn't ignore it.
Yeah.
So that if for whatever reason, you know, something horrible happened in beyond the digital, in the physical world, that I had screenshots of all of that crap and just dumped it at the police's feet if something had happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes
sense. Not because I wanted to or I took pleasure from it. I didn't. I just literally felt I was making myself vulnerable. And I felt I had to sacrifice my mental well-being to remain physically alert and physically safe.
Yeah, that's... Oof.
Again, this book gets a lot of my adult struggles.
That's why reading is so good.
Mm-hmm. So we've got History of Magic, and History of Magic is, of course, first, before we get the classes, we get this little interaction with Fred and George. And just, you know, kind of reminding, Harry the writer is using this conversation to remind the audience that this is the OWL year, which I'm sure is an equivalent to some sort of testing within the UK, you know, educational system. Okay. I can't remember them. Is it A-levels? Are maybe not? I forget. But yeah,
something
I'll
like
need
that.
To ask Nat again.
Yeah. Yeah, she would know for sure.
Yeah, but they're OWLs, and you cannot advance into the next year of that subject unless you get a certain score on your OWL OWL, which stands for Ordinary Wizarding Level.
All right. And then we have the newts next, right?
Yeah, and then the newts are the Nastily Exhausting Wizarding Test.
Oh my goodness, that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. And so Fred and George are like, yeah, this year is going to suck for you. You're going to wish you had one of our skiving snack boxes. And Hermione is like, what are you doing to get all the money to start this? And Fred and George are just like, ask us no questions and we will tell you no lies.
Yeah, right. Because they don't want to, nobody wants to kind of blow the lid off that, which.
Yeah. And Ron and Harry's just like, steer this in another direction.
Yeah. I've been in those situations where I'm like, I just don't let me make me say anything.
Yeah. And then what we got, and then they start thinking about what would they want to be when they grow up.
Yeah. This was kind of an interesting conversation because, Ron had kind of expressed he wanted to be an Auror and he kind of did it kind of sheepishly too. And I think he still does. He's just not confident enough in his abilities quite yet.
Yes. And then Hermione's like, I don't know, I think I'd like to do something worthwhile. And Aurors is worthwhile, said Harry. Yes, but it's not the only worthwhile thing, said Hermione thoughtfully.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could take Spew further. So, yeah. So they're still, you know, pondering, like, what am I going to do with my life? I'm still pondering that at 30.
I was going to say I'm 38 and I still am too. So wish I would have had it figured out when I was 14, but I didn't. So,
yeah. History of Magic was by common consent the most boring subject ever devised by wizard kind. Professor Binns, their ghost teacher, had a wheezing, droning voice, guaranteed to cause severe drowsiness within 10 minutes, 5 in warm weather.
Oh my gosh. This just gives me flashbacks to a history teacher I had. So
Yeah, awful. In that Catholic school that wouldn't pay for a dumb AC.
Exactly. So this is a very relatable experience for me because he would just drone on about like the war or whatever war, and it was hot and we were all about to pass out. So yeah, it was, I feel their pain.
Yeah. Which again, I think we discussed this, you know, in like back in book one episode with Morgan. History does not have to be boring.
No, it doesn't. I was going to say this actually sounds like I would be like super fascinated by it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like if, you know, people are so enthralled by Game of Thrones, incest, beheading, crazy shit, just pick up a history book, man.
Exactly. Exactly.
So after History of Magic,
I think there's potions, right?
Well, the one thing I took notice of, how would it be if I refused to lend you my notes this year? We'd fail our OWL, said Ron. If you want that on your conscience, Hermione, you deserve it. You don't even try to listen to him. We do try. We just haven't got your brains or your memory or concentration. You're just cleverer than we are. Is it nice to rub it in? Which, it made me think of the sort of sexist thing where, oh, well, it's not just sexist. Anyone can do this. Like the concept of you don't want to do something, so you try and flatter someone else to be like, you're just so much better at this than I am.
Yeah.
You know, to get another person to do it. And I specifically, this made me think of, did you ever watch in the Marvel Universe, there's something called Agent Carter?
I was familiar, but I didn't watch it. Yeah.
I watched a little bit of it, and there's a scene where a man, Agent Carter is a woman, played by one of my favorite actresses. I forget her name, but he comes up to her and he's like, oh, can you like file this? Like, you're so much better at it than I am. And she's like, with what, Agent? The alphabet? I can teach you if you'd like. Again, like basically, you know, this man, you know, wanted her to do the filing, do the secretarial stuff because he felt it was beneath him. And so she threw it in his face like, what, you can't alphabetize shit?
That is, there's a name for that. And I forgot what it was, but that's just like the, or I don't know how to, I don't know, you know, flattery and willful incompetence. I think that's something different. But yeah, flattery. I've wondered a couple of times at work. It's like, oh, you're so good at this. And I'm like, are you just playing me to so I do this? Because I mean, I will. Like, I like to get things done. So yeah, it's very annoying and sometimes, at least for people like me, hard to see through. So.
Mm-hmm. And so where do they go? They go down to the dungeons for Snape's lesson.
Good old Snape.
Yep. And, before Snape, we get Cho Chang.
Yeah. Yeah. A little.
Again, this
little
50 minute chapter. Like, there was a lot in this.
Yeah. Time. A lot happens. Yeah. Yep. Which there was, you know, the last time that they kind of had the encounter, what did he have? Stink sap all over him or something? And she was kind of like,
stink sap. Oh. And Cho's trying to just have a conversation with him. And again, I'm all with Hermione. Like Ron is getting up in Cho's face about whether she's just riding the tornado bandwagon.
Right. It's like getting into some sports thing. And I feel like where Hermione's like, we've talked about her. She's has, you know, enough wherewithal to be like, let's just take a step back. Let's not be a bully about her sports team.
Yeah. So. Who cares if she sports the tornadoes? Oh, come on. Half the people. But why does it matter? It means they're not real fans.
Oh my gosh. You know, this, yeah.
I don't know. It just made me think of the, you know, many praise the Harry Potter fandom and community as being substantially lacking the typical bullshit that comes with super big fandoms. And one of the ones that is considered kind of the most notorious for that sort of negative stuff is the Star Wars gatekeeping.
Yeah, didn't they really like attack that one Asian American actress, I think, in one, I don't know.
Oh yeah, like the whole people who basically can't deal with the franchise being less white.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, you know, thankfully I haven't really ever gotten into super deep into that, but
neither have I. But yeah, so yeah, it just made me think of that because that is definitely, of all fandoms, like Harry Potter is praised as being one of the most like positive and encouraging, inclusive and accepting, which is why a lot of people are so pissed off by J.K. Rowling and what she has said.
That makes sense. Ways. Yeah.
Because the whole point is we, you know, we don't have that shit the way other franchises do.
Right. Inclusivity. Yeah, that's, I think it really made people's heads spin when that all happened.
And so we get Cho, she, you know, comes over, Ron ruins it, and then they go to to the dungeons for potions. And Snape is like, moronic though some of this class undoubtedly are, I expect you to scrape an acceptable in your Odello bill or suffer my displeasure.
What does that even mean? Like, I was like, all right, man.
Like, weird. I interpret that as, like, I'm going to come for you in the night if you fail.
I was kind of like, is this borderline sexual? Like, what are you doing? It's so weird. I would have been like, you're so weird. Like, what does that even mean?
Why was it back in book one, we said 50 Shades of Snape. He's going to take you down to his dungeon.
I'm going to pass. I would personally pass, but he's an odd duck.
Yeah,
I would say.
I take only the very best into my NEWT potions class, which means that some of us will certainly be saying goodbye.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. But we have another year to go before that happy moment of farewell.
Oh my god. Such a drama queen.
Indeed. So, today, they're making the Draught of Peace, a potion to calm anxiety and soothe agitation, which I was just like, Snape, can you please make that for me?
No, can I have that in like a drum for like my daily life, please?
Can I put that in like a gallon and just...
Yeah. Just make that my water, like that comes out of the faucet. Yeah, just make that
my water intake. Like, yeah. I don't know what it's, this steam is clearless. Like, if it's clearless, I just want to put in the water bottle, like the vodka in the water bottle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a great plan.
The ingredients and method are on the blackboard. You will find everything you need in the store cupboard. You'll have an hour and a half. Start. It's like one of those cooking shows. Ready, bake.
Right. Yeah. And of course, Harry misses an ingredient.
Yeah. Which, again, it's interesting. You know, there was one episode of where Kevin was very hard on Harry for being as shitty as he is in potions. And it's, you know, because it's like literally the instructions are on the blackboard. Like, how can you blame that you doing badly on Snape? But again, like, Snape is just so shitty. He just makes everyone nervous.
Maybe he had poor eyesight. I mean, he already wears glasses. Maybe he needs a prescription upgrade. I dealt with that as a kid. So there we go.
Yep. And so Hermione's is perfect. And Snape doesn't say anything, which is basically good. No news is good news, right? Because it meant he had absolutely nothing he could find that he could criticize.
That's the best we can get from Snape most days.
Yep. Potter, what is this supposed to be?
Oh my gosh. He never, like, he's never... Anything he can do to embarrass Harry, he'll do.
Yep. And it's just interesting that it's not just like any sort of, like, just by the nature of how Harry's potion has gone wrong, he can immediately tell which ingredient he forgot. And he's like, look at the third line.
That's pretty smart, Mr. Snape.
Yep. And then he had forgotten the hellebore, which I have no clue if that's even real or not. I can't remember.
That's what I was just going to ask, so.
And so Harry gets 0 marks for the day.
Dang.
And then, so, and Hermione, again, I think there's a testament of Hermione knowing how touchy Harry is right now, because usually Hermione is the one that, at the very least, ignores Snape, if not kind of sort of defends him in terms of, yes, he's not very nice, but he's helping the order and shit like that.
Right.
Yeah, but even she's saying, like, I thought he would be better this year now that he's, you know, in the order.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, and they're going back and forth about Snape, and Hermione's just like, I think Dumbledore's probably got plenty of evidence, even if he doesn't share it with you, Ron.
Yeah, and then Harry is like, okay, shut up, both of you. He's sick of their bickering.
Which, and, like, both of them are shocked as Harry, and Harry takes a sadistic pleasure in, like, their shocked faces as he stomps away.
He's a little much. I don't know.
He's a little much, and literally spends the rest of his lunch break at the foot of the North Tower under the trapdoor before, and then so he's the first to go up the ladder to divination with Trelawney.
Love Trelawney. She's so crazy. I love her. And nobody died, as she knew over the summer. She predicted it. Well, I mean, Cedric died, but that was before summer break.
And so people trickle in. Ron finally comes in too, and he's like, Hermione and Mia stop arguing. But Hermione says she thinks it would be nice if you stopped taking out your tempers on us. I'm not. I'm just passing on the message, said Ron, talking him down. But I reckon she's right. It's not our fault how Seamus and Snape treat you.
Good for him. I mean, he's exactly right. You know, but I think it is a kind of a situation where sometimes when you're upset, it's easy to take it out on the people you love because you know they'll still be there.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's just a situation of just your threshold and your patience is just so low. So that sort of bickering that typically like Harry would tolerate, if not find outright amusing, he's just like, I'm not here for it.
Right. Yeah. He's at his wits end.
Yep. And so Trelawney is starting the subject of dream interpretation.
Awesome. I'd be excited.
Yes, I would be pretty stoked because even if you take a divinatory meaning outside of like dreams, at least the ones you remember, are always rooted in some sort of, you know, symbolism of a specific anxiety. Like, yeah. I constantly have the teeth falling out or teeth rotting, like when I'm anxious.
And I get on stage and forget my lines. So
that's I thought you said you forget your pants.
I know. I'd probably be fine with it, really, but forgetting my lines, that's fine. That's my anxiety dream.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the flying dream a lot?
I've only had that once or twice. I wish I had it more.
Maybe. I don't have a flying dream. Well, if I do, it's more like a swimming dream. Like I'm a mermaid in the clouds. Like flying is never like flapping or like, oh, it's like always like swimming.
Mm. Is it fun or is it like scary?
It's both.
Okay. Fun and scary. Yeah. I get it.
So they're not super stoked about having to keep a dream journal.
Weird.
Which is I can't think of an easier assignment. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And let's see. And then we got, it's finally Professor Umbridge's class. Again, your reaction to this whole Umbridge scene.
The whole thing. Because it ends in like detention. You know, again, she has kind of, well, first of all, in the actual text, they have her like writing on the blackboard, which is very kind of, for lack of a better term, girly, you know, very kind of dainty. And I think she kind of wants to present that, even though she is described as toad-like. She dresses a certain way. The pitch of her voice is very, you know, light and airy and whatever. And I really like that kind of dichotomy of somebody can look one way and then just be kind of nasty. And
there is this question of, it's never fully answered. It's just what headcanon you choose is Umbridge's proclivity towards like pink and super girly stuff. Is that stuff she genuinely likes and is still a nasty person? Or is she purposely choosing that sort of demeanor to throw people off?
I think it just makes her more malicious to think she's doing that to throw people off. And I think I've kind of had encounter. I think the reason I find her so interesting is I've encountered people like that. Like, you know, somebody that presents like nice, but in actuality, they're nasty as hell. They just know that they can, you know, kind of get a little further if they present that way.
Umbridge, they all sit down. And she's just like, well, no, your teaching in this subject has been rather disrupted and fragmented, hasn't it? The constant changing of teachers, many of whom did not seem to have followed any ministry-approved curriculum, has unfortunately resulted in you being so far below the standard we would expect to see you in your OWL year. You will be pleased to know, however, these problems are now to be rectified. So, she's... Course aims, understanding the principles underlying defensive magic, learning to recognize situations in which defensive magic can legally be used, placing the use of defensive magic in a context for practical use.
So that sounds very boring for the defense against the dark arts, you know?
Yeah. And all she does is tell them, read chapter one.
Yeah. Yeah.
There will be no need to talk.
Very, very boring. Right. Thus far. Very, yep. Very.
And Hermione plain. Raises her hand.
Yes.
And she's like, there's nothing about using defensive spells. Using defensive spells, Professor Umbridge repeated with a little laugh. Why, I can't imagine any situation arising in my classroom that would require you to use a defensive spell, Miss Granger.
Yeah, I mean, all of this just kind of screams like ministry plant, you know, like, oh, everything's fine. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so what use is that? Said Harry loudly. If we're going to be attacked, it won't be in a hand, Mr. Potter. And your name is, said Professor Umbridge said to Dean. Well, it's like Harry said, if we're going to be attacked, it won't be risk-free. I repeat, do you expect to be attacked during my classes? So basically the idea is they're starting to realize, like, she's not going to, like, teach them anything.
Yeah, no.
Like, or it's all theoretical and nothing is going to be practical.
Which, if there's any time they need to use a defense against the dark arts teacher that's going to teach them something, it's right now.
It's right now. And she is just like, you know, but you have been exposed to some very irresponsible wizards in this class. Very irresponsible indeed, not to mention, she gave a nasty little laugh, extremely dangerous half-breeds.
Yeah, that's a little dig at our favorite
Professor. If you mean Lupin. Professor Lupin, said, piped up Dean Thomas angrily, he was the best we ever. Hand, Mr. Thomas. Yeah.
The only thing, and well, we haven't, well, I'll let us get to that. I'm jumping.
Yeah. Like, basically, you know, it's, she's even going so far as to be like, if you've practiced the theory well enough, like, base, you know, they're not going to literally utter the incantation and perform the spell until their OWL examination.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And that this is school, Mr. Potter, not the real world.
And yeah, so we're not supposed to be, prepared for what's waiting. No, there's nothing out there, which is, again, very much the line the Ministry of Magic has been pushing. Voldemort's not a problem. Everything's fine.
Who do you imagine wants to attack children like yourselves? Inquired Professor Umbridge in a horribly honeyed voice. Let's think. Maybe Lord Voldemort. Mic drop.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But then she starts taking some points. And Harry keeps pushing.
And to the point that Harry gets detention.
I feel a little torn. People are going to hate me when I say this. It's fine. Harry has been sassy as hell to all these teachers. And she's finally like, no, you're not going to be sassy to me. Now we know she's pushing bullshit, but like, I guess, like, at least teachers I had, and I went to Catholic school, like, Harry Potter wouldn't have lasted, like, an hour in school with him sassing off to everybody. So yeah, I was kind of like, Harry, you have been pushing it for years.
And sassing it? Well, and again, I blame the adults in the Order of the Phoenix because they have not, they've kept him at arm's length and haven't allowed him full involvement or at least full information and haven't really, you know, didn't really prep him for, okay, there are going to be people there who are going to push, who are going to purposely try to push your buttons because right. That's what the ministry wants, for you to look crazy and unstable and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, yeah. You know, he didn't get any coaching like that from Sirius. He didn't get it from Remus. He didn't, sure as fuck didn't get it from Dumbledore.
Right, right. Yeah. This is, I mean, all this is leading us to nasty business. So, but she's being very manipulative in her own little way.
Yeah, because she's definitely goading him and wanted any excuse to, like, give him detention. And she's saying, you know, this is a lie. If you hear anything about it, you know, please come to me. I'm your friend. And Harry's like, so according to you, Cedric Diggory dropped dead of his own accord, did he? Which is interesting because the ministry never, like, we never hear of from Harry the writer. We don't hear what technically any, if any story is being pushed by the ministry to make sense of Cedric's death.
Yeah, that has been explained how they have explained it.
Yeah, it has not been explained how they explained it. And the only thing I can think of really is, you know, saying that, you know, something in the, like, one of the giant spiders in the maze killed him.
Yeah.
Like, something in the maze killed him.
Yeah, I wonder how they would spin that, because, like, that, then that's, you know, that kind of puts Hogwarts in a bad light, which maybe they want to do that. Like, makes you think, you know, we've set up the Triwizard Tournament just to kill off a kid. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Cedric Diggory's death was a tragic accident, she said coldly.
It was murder.
Yes. That's
what Harry said.
Yep. And so finally, he gets called up to his desk, her desk, and she's like, go take this to McGonagall.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about this part. Yeah.
Yep. And then, so he goes out, passes by Peeves, and it's like, oh, most think he's barking, the potty wee lad, but some are more kindly and think he's just sad, but Peeves he knows and says that he's mad.
Peeves, shut up. I agree with Harry. Just go away.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so McGonagall brings him into her office and she reads the note and she's like, is it true that you shouted at Professor Umbridge? Yes, said Harry. You called her a liar? Yes. You told her he who must not be named is back? Yes. Professor McGonagall sat down behind her desk, watching Harry closely. Then she said, have a biscuit, Potter.
Which kind of throws him off. He's kind of like,
wait. Yeah, and that's now a famous line in the fandom. Have a biscuit, Potter.
Oh, that's funny.
And Harry likens it to the thing where she thought she was gonna beat the crap out of him for catching the Remembrall and realized that she was gonna put him on the Quidditch team.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of like the same similar experience here. And she tells him he needs to be careful. Misbehavior in Dolores Umbridge's class could cost you much more than house points in detention. And then she says, Potter, use your common sense. You know where she comes from and you know to whom she is reporting. So basically, pump the brakes and just don't make trouble in her class.
Yeah. Everything this week, but no, I couldn't. She is your teacher and she has every right to give you detention. But I was telling the truth, said Harry, outraged. Voldemort's back. You know he is, Professor. For heaven's sake, Potter, said Professor McGonagall. Do you really think this is about truth or lies? It's about keeping your head down and your temper under control. Which, again, Harry would be more inclined to think that way if the adults around him were coaching him, but they're not doing diddly squat.
No, they're not. They're not.
I doubt if Harry had not been attacked by Dementors, he probably wouldn't have heard of Dumbledore or anybody all summer.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And she's like, don't you know why she's here? Didn't you listen to her speech? And she's like, yes, she said progress will be prohibited, or we'll admit that the Ministry of Magic is trying to interfere at Hogwarts. McGonagall eyed him closely for a moment. Well, I'm glad you listened to Hermione Granger at any rate, she said, pointing him out of her office.
Man.
McGonagall knows where the brains of this operation is at.
She does. She does. Good for her. And next, and then that's done.
Indeed. So, no, just a lot. Again, we already knew what was going on and what Fudge was up to, but again, with Seamus and with everything else, we now see the full scale of Harry being like, oh my god, like literally everyone thinks I'm insane.
Everyone thinks, and everybody's kind of got a stake in this, what's going on, and it's not just about him. It's kind of about him, but it's definitely
He is the symbol of what this debate means. Right. Just in the way Trump was, you know, Trump can be, you know, Trump is really easy to attack and everything, but that's a lot of what he represents in terms of, you know, allowing certain shitty behaviors to be legitimized.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. He was the symbol of an already divided country.
Yeah. Anyway, so shall we move into Gothic Geek Out?
Sure.
What did you think of?
I think a little kind of weird, but I thought the Sorting Hat was kind of goth. this go around with the Sorting Hat song, kind of being a little foreboding and
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing and a little, I would say a little foreboding too. And then just talking about his, talking about the history of the houses and things like that. So that was my Gothic geek out. I was going to say Umbridge, but
And it's just interesting because the traditional witch's hat, like that, the Sorting Hat's supposed to look like that whole like stereotype, that part of a witch's costume, that comes from just the rural women's like country hat that women used to wear.
Just for practical reasons, right?
Yeah, Yeah, just for practical reasons, not that they liked it to be swirly or whatever. Mm-hmm. My gothic geek out is Harry being accused of being insane. He's now surrounded by people who think he's insane, because whether it directly involves an insane asylum or not in the story, though I'm a big fan of that subset in gothic literature, even if it doesn't directly involve an insane asylum, you know, it's whether it's like, oh my God, I saw a ghost. You're crazy. Like, there are no such thing as ghosts, blah, blah, blah. Usually in some capacity, a lot of gothic heroes and heroines are portrayed as insane or hallucinating, whether it's via a ghost, or again, even if it's non like fantastical and like it's a like family secret, like someone got murdered and they've realized it, and it's like, that no, that didn't happen, you're crazy. So just you know, undercovering an unpleasant truth that no one else wants to acknowledge because they have a stake in the facade being maintained.
That's a good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but that's all I got. But otherwise, not too gothic this time.
Not a super gothic chapter, no.
Alrighty then. And so now we move on to Tarot of the Day, which I had so many appointments today that I could not pick one beforehand. So I'm picking one right now.
Awesome.
Okay. And it's going to be the Four of Pentacles. We've done this card, haven't we?
I can look. I can.
Yeah, this is no. We're okay. Yeah, we're doing a different card because this is okay. Yeah, this is the Four of Pentacles. This is a this is the Ebenezer Scrooge card.
Okay, I think we have.
Yeah, we have. So we're gonna do another one because yeah, like the one thing, like disclosure, like if I pick a card that I know that we've done, like I pick another card.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, the Fool.
We have not done that.
We've done the Magician, I think. We have not done the Fool.
Okay, yeah, so, definitely not done that.
So card number 0 in the Major Arcana.
I found it. You were right. Four of Pentacles, sorry.
You keep a record of them? Wow, you do better than I do.
I try.
Yeah. The Fool is a card of new beginnings, opportunity, and potential. Just like the young man, you are at the outset of your journey, and go away, internet ad, I don't want you. Even though you don't know exactly where you're going, you are being called to commit to yourself and follow your heart, no matter how crazy this leap of fate might seem to you. Now is the time when you need to trust where the universe is taking you. So, yeah, so the Fool is all about taking a journey, and it's a time of great potential and opportunity for you right now. The world is your oyster and anything can happen. Use your creative mind with a dash of spontaneity to make the most of this magical timing and bring forth your new ideas in powerful ways. So just, again, even though the term like Fool like has a very derogatory sense,
right,
in modern times as being like naive or childish, it's again like really in the way I understand like the card, the Fool, again, it's just all about like beginning a journey, because literally the guy on the card has like a little like has the like stick with a little pouch over his shoulder, mm-hmm. like about to you know hit, like just pull out his thumb to hitchhike somewhere.
Right. Is it kind of like an, let's just say, fools being like starting something new and very kind of base level kind of learning.
Yeah.
And starting a journey. You don't know anything yet. You
don't know what yet. And again, just they're beginning their OWL journey.
Yeah, there seasons. We go. I'm just taking a note. OWL journey. They're also beginning their journey with a new dark arts teacher.
Yes, they are starting that journey, which I don't think is going to be a very pleasant one.
I don't think so either. I saw the artwork for the next chapter, so that's what's up.
Yep. And then what else in regards to like new beginnings? Again, it's hard I want to read what is the reversed meaning of the Fool. I think that might be more applicable. The Fool reversed suggests that you have conceived of a new project but aren't ready to birth it into the world just yet. You may worry that you are not fit or that you don't have all the tools, skills, and resources you need to make this project a success. Or perhaps you have a sense that the timing isn't right. You may feel that the unknown, wondering what am I getting myself into. As a result, you have come to a standstill, worried about taking any action when you don't know what the outcome will be. This often boils down to the need to control everything. Balance this out with knowledge that the universe has your back and you can take this step forward, even if you are unsure of exactly what will happen next. So, yeah, definitely, I think Harry can embody, again, the reversed meaning of the Fool, because he, I think, is just, at this point, just kind of paralyzed by this new status he has as the butt of everyone's joke and as, like, the diva celebrity child.
Yeah, it's kind of had a total about face from where he started, where everybody was like, oh, it's Harry Potter, oh my God, to like, oh my God, it's Harry Potter. Like, they totally, you know, kind of reversed on him a little.
Yeah, like Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Lindsay or Brittany, Brittany kind of changed a little bit now, but I was definitely knew her when everybody was like, oh my gosh, this crazy woman shaving her hair. Think of the children. So yeah, it's she was so great until she wasn't. That's how a lot of celebrity journeys go. So Harry might be experiencing just kind of like the female stardom trajectory right now.
Yeah. Nice. So, all right. Any other thoughts for the Fool?
No, I think it's a good card, but I'm having a hard time applying.
Yeah, like I just don't have the headspace to think that deeply about it because it's been a very long day.
Yeah.
So I'm also picking at random the cards from my Black Moon Astrology, and the card I got was my own sun sign, Taurus.
Oh, yay, Taurus! Awesome. Sure.
Where's the book? Where's the book? Oh, I have to get up and get the book.
I was going to say, I mean, you know a lot about Taurus just as a Taurus, I'm sure.
Well, Harry's embodying one big negative Taurus aspect, which is being stubborn.
Yeah, that's what
being stubborn say. Because, he hasn't gotten enough validation from the adults around him in the order. So he doesn't know how to deal with, again, the fact that he's telling the truth and people still think he should be punished for that.
Yeah.
So, most Taurians only believe what they can see or touch, yet many gurus are born under the sign of the Bull. So that means they're spiritual too, but tend to be dismissive over subjects they don't know much about. They have a conservative nature, so often must be convinced. Let's see what we got. Taurus is the sign that rules the fairy world, so contact with fairies or elementals is possible when this card turns up in a reading. Oh, I want Harry to commune with the fairies in the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Go step in a fairy circle.
Hey, why not?
Mm-hmm. So this card indicates talents in the arts, especially singing and music. Taurus shares rulership with Leo over the stage, so matters involving plays, musician, theater, concerts, and those are traditional, such as ballet or classical music. Come on, give me something more substantial or more, I guess, more applicable.
I was thinking of Taurus traits, and I mean stubbornness, of course, is like what is something that the negative, kind of like Cancer is always, you know, sensitivity, and you kind of like flick you and you cry, like, which, you know, it depends on the day, it can or can't be true, but like the Taurus people that I've known are, steadfast in their belief and, you know, appreciate beautiful things.
Yes, we are very into like luxury, which is kind of, again, very much not Harry in the sense of, you know, in terms of his beginnings with the Dursleys, did not have anything, nor did he go completely insane when he finally got money, you know, right. when he learned he was a wizard, so... Yeah, the Taurus card corresponds to the Hierophant card in the tarot, so this indicates tradition and not so much being brash, controversial, or eccentric. Mm. So, yeah, Harry is fighting against all the Taurian ethos of tradition, stability, and establishment.
Yeah, yes, he is, yeah. I'm thinking about, like, the dreaminess or whatever, which is kind of that's how the chapter started with it. Kind of like, why do Luna and I have like, or why are we thinking along the same lines? Like, this is strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taurus natives are ruled by Venus, the planet of loveliness and indulgence. They tend to be down to earth, but have a special eye for attractiveness and always have a need for luxury. practical matters rule first with Taurus, taking care of the home and all the comforts before they move on towards what they truly love, which is pondering the meaning of their fates. As spiritual masters and teachers, they never completely stray away from what is real and solid ground, yet in their own way, they can be dreamy.
I'm just thinking about the Taurus people that I know. And a little,
do you know a lot of them? I don't know that many besides myself.
I did. I've known a couple of Tauruses in my day. And I think, you know, the pragmatism a little bit too is kind of a Taurus thing. Which is kind of weird because dreamy and but then also one foot in realism as well. Or, you know, just like,
yeah, I don't know, solid facts. I think Harry's representing, again, the more negative aspects of Taurus by being brash and basically bulldozing into everyone and anything right now, because it's the type where he's always like impulsive, but he's never been like brash or like mean. Like that's not like innate in Tauruses usually to do that. That is coming from where we've been patient and we've been nice and we've been, you know, doing everything right for so long, and then right. No one cares and no one appreciates it until the point where we can't hold it in anymore, and then we're gonna gore you to death.
It's like, it's, yeah, basically the, you know, you're just grazing in the field and then somebody comes and puts you in a rodeo. I'm trying not to be graphic.
Or it keeps waving a red flag in your face.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like not touching you. Not touching right. you. Not touching you.
Yeah, basically continue to provoke. Harry's obviously past that. You know, he's done with the patience part. He has been provoked. He's got red flags all over the place. And he's popping off, you know.
Yep. And so in Umbridge's class, he's like, was that expression, the bull in the china shop?
Yeah, he very much kind of embodies that. And I guess her pink outfit is like, it's close to red in a
the
way.
Red flag.
Yes.
Alrighty. Yeah. Then wonderful. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. I'm going to make sure I have time to pull them next time because I don't like pulling them on the spot.
I thought it was fine. It's fine.
Alrighty. And then we move on to our last exercise. Fan fiction time.
The best I could come up with is, what if there was a different dark arts teacher, one not controlled by the ministry? And I feel like that is kind of very, very kind of impossible probably to move the story along. But just what if Dolores was doing something else? What if the dark arts teacher was somebody else?
Like, what if she was still there interfering with Hogwarts, just not specifically as a teacher?
Just a different subject matter, maybe, even, you know, making the dark arts teacher maybe moody, you know, but the for real moody this time, you know, just kind of changing her role to not be in the dark arts, but instead just what if there is a different dark arts teacher? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be nice if they could get Lupin back.
It would be nice if they could get Lupin back.
That would be pretty sweet.
But that would be, man, that just could not happen right now, could it? With all the heat that's on Hogwarts, so.
With all the heat on Hogwarts to hire a known werewolf.
Yeah, yeah. Oof, couldn't happen.
It's sadly, that could not be. Who else could they have gotten? Like, again, Kingsley, Shacklebolt, and Nymphadora, like Tonks, like they work at the ministry. They don't have time to teach.
Yeah. I'm trying to think too. Sirius. I know, like, that couldn't happen. Yeah.
If he ever were to teach everything, because he's an animagus, I always see him as a transfiguration teacher.
That would be great. That'd probably be very spot on. That was kind of the best I could do. I was having a hard time right now with that.
Yeah. So mine was just, what if the thing with Seamus didn't blow up? What if Seamus was more, again, had the smarts to keep that to himself and just ask Harry, it's like, hey, you know, like what happened?
I feel like Harry would have definitely been a little less on edge. He might feel a little more supported.
Yeah. Whether he would have been fully open to like having to relive the whole thing again, especially when he knows that this, everything he's going to say is going to be judged compared to what he knows Seamus has read.
Right, right.
But yeah, there, again, there were so many other ways, because even though Harry is very testy, like, Seamus clearly came at this thing, you know, with no open mind whatsoever.
Right, right, for sure. No, he wasn't, like, didn't say, like, hey, let me get you some pumpkin juice and let me ask you some questions, which might have been a better approach.
Yeah.
More adult approach.
And then I thought about just if things had gone a little differently with the conversation with Umbridge in her classroom. Because I think of that, like, you know, even if you take away the quote-unquote, you know, Voldemort's back, you know, Harry could still have argued with her about, like, you know, so if someone just walks up and is going to attack me, what am I supposed to do? Right. Like, again, like, irregardless of whether Voldemort's back, there are still going to be shitty people or, you know, dangerous creatures in this right. world. Like, we're just not supposed to do anything. Like, just the norm, like, again, quote unquote, the normal crime or whatever that occurs in society. We're just going to forget that doesn't happen.
Yeah, like a very, well, we know that she's probably not like a pacifist or whatever. Like, she's not so,
Or if, you know, if Harry had been smart enough to just to shut up.
But I think, I mean, obviously McGonagall is really kind of encouraging that for going forward, like, just don't push it, because she's obviously, you know, we know what's going on. And if, you know, if Harry got out of his emotions for a second, he could probably see that as well. But mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I had too.
Yeah. They were long chapters with a lot going on. I just couldn't think of anything super fun.
Yeah. Again, and I'm really tired now.
It's been a weird day.
It has been. But that concludes this episode of Rambling Ravenpuffs. Tune in next week for chapters 13 and 14, which is Detention with Dolores. And then what's the other one? Percy and Padfoot. And joining us for Detention with Dolores will be our favorite Potterhead couple, Amanda and Kevin Wilson from the Fox and Fox Sound. So yay. Get all hyped up for that. Catch you guys later. Bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.